The Ghost Goal Podcast.
Arsenal went top of the Premier League last weekend and progressed to the quarterfinals of the Champions League on Tuesday, after Liverpool and Manchester City fought out to a 1-1 draw at Anfield on Sunday, and David Raya came through in the penalty shootout against Porto. Tottenham closed the gap on Villa in the race for top four and Champions League football next season. And the FA Cup is back, limiting this weekend's Premier League matchups to only four games. But all the tasty ones seem to be going on in the FA Cup itself. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 444. Apologies about last week.
I think it's 445, Alex.
As the the producer of this show, I can confidently say it's 444 because last week's episode got corrupted and never got posted. So, we're stuck on 444 for this week.
That's what happened.
That voice you hear is Javier, who's obviously very happy for the aforementioned Arsenal loot news over the last couple of days. I'm Alex. Welcome. We obviously have plenty of Champions League and, you know, top end of the Premier League news to talk about. And we have some FA Cup and some relegation six-pointers coming up this weekend that we're going to talk about. So, Javier, why don't we just get this out of the way? Most of the time, I'm telling you out when you guys beat teams like Sheffield and Burnley by like five or six goals, like, okay, man, limit this to 5 minutes or something. But, you know, have at it. Take your time. Maybe not like 15 minutes, but, you know, a good 10 to 15. Go ahead and wax lyrical about how great of a week it's been for Arsenal.
Oh, Alex, I mean, this is what I wanted, right? This is what we needed to do. Get this curse off our back, the quarterfinal Champions League curse of not being able to get to the quarterfinals, you know, of having easy-ish matchups looking. Also some really hard ones in like Bayern and Barcelona in previous years where we got destroyed. But, you know, that plus, you know, choking against Lisbon in Europa League, you know, just things like this have happened now multiple years in a row with Arteta in cups. So to finally, like, break that curse. It felt like the whole time it was 1-0 in that game, just holding my breath, like, when is the second goal coming? When am I going to, like, get some relief here? Never came, which was just the whole time biting my nails, just so nervous because I'm sure the whole stadium was tense too because, it felt like maybe we weren't going to do it again. And, I mean, for them to hold out at 1-0 for 120 minutes. Porto defended unbelievably in that game. I mean, I don't think we were at our best, but we were playing some decent stuff at times, and Porto were just cutting everything out, last-minute clearances, balls, you know, cleared off the line, or, like, you know, back post headers to make sure a tap-in doesn't go in. Like, you know, Diogo Costa, I mean, he's unreal. That keeper, I mean, he's wherever he goes, because I've never seen a player since, I want to say, Ederson, who I remember watching him in Brazil. I was like, this guy looks like he's unbelievable at goalkeeping, just makes it look so easy. Costa's like that. When you watch him play as a goalie, everything he does is so polished and, like, refined, even in a huge Champions League game like this. When he was constantly getting, like, shut down, you know, put under pressure, he would just ping a ball 50, 60 yards to, like, a Porto forward who was up the field and right to the guy's foot. And, like I said this to you, Alex, like, to me, he looks better than someone like, even like Raya, who had an amazing performance, you know, in the shootout and was great, you know, on both legs and has been amazing for us this season. I think Costa is, like, even a higher level. Like, he could be an upgrade on someone like Raya, but I mean, obviously I don't think we're going to go and get someone like him, but he could end up on, you know, Real Madrid, you know, City. Like, he's that good. So, I want to give Porto props because they, you know, they played their game. They did their thing. They're more experienced than us in the Champions League. And, you know, they limited us all with fouls and you know, wasting time on free kicks and throw-ins and, you know, every 5 seconds going down for an injury. You know, it was the referee always kept stopping the game for them. You know, it was their game, you know, and it felt like things were going to go their way, and I'm glad that we were able to break that. You know, it showed fortitude from the team to really not give Porto much of a sniff. You know, we were able to keep them to, even though the game the entire time was on a knife edge, you know, at no point were we did we make a huge mistake? You know, there was small mistakes that led to like corners or small chances from Porto. But again, that was something I was proud of, like in a huge game to not make any big mistakes, which usually has happened in the past. And then in penalty shootouts, I mean, we scored all of our penalties, you know, huge from Kai Havertz, Declan Rice, Odegaard, Saka, all those players are our leaders in the team. They all stepped up and scored penalties. You know, I can't say enough about like how I feel like the characters change in this team, how the mentality's changed, the standards. You know, I think the biggest thing that Arteta's done is come in and change the mentality and gotten every single player. Every single player that was there before that maybe was there for the wrong reasons or was there, you know, under Wenger or came at a time when Arsenal just had money but, you know, didn't have the stature and players like Aubameyang, you know, he got them all out of the club. He changed the culture and the group is so close now. I mean, you just see on the pitch whenever someone makes a mistake, you know, everyone's there to back the guy up, you know, not to put him down. You know, people don't put their heads down after they make mistakes. Even Kai Havertz, the biggest change and why I wax lyrically to you and to our friends, like about Kai Havertz right now is because his body language at the beginning of the season was such that I didn't want him in the team. I was constantly complaining about him. I thought that he was a detriment. Why? Because he would get these chances, he would miss them, and then he'd put his head down, and he'd look like he'd be moping, and it looked like he just didn't have confidence. Now, if he misses a chance, like he gets right back at it, and he's become a huge nuisance. He's become a huge part of the team in terms of like.
I mean, he attacked the other team's manager.
Oh, you see I loved it. And did you see the ref didn't give him a card?
That was wild.
Alex, the ref was letting everything go. Absolutely everything go. Kai Havertz is just a great example of the coaching. You know, of a player who, you know, like Granit Xhaka, definitely did not have a great start at Arsenal. Took him many years to turn it around, but I think it was Mikel Arteta who turned it around for him. We could see for Kai Havertz that Arteta's, you know, put a lot of coaching, a lot of time, a lot of effort into him, and it cost us at the beginning of the season. It cost us points, it cost us some time, but now that he's in the team and he's playing, I mean, I don't want him off the pitch. Like, I don't understand. Like, there's times where, like, yeah, he still messes up on the ball, he still doesn't make the final finish, but his contributions off the ball, you know, in the air, you know, what he does to the other, he seems to always enrage the other team, you know, does things to inflame the other team. And it's something that we need. We need characters like that in the team. We need, you know, obviously Declan Rice as well. He's been our player of the season, I think, our most consistent performer. Was amazing against Porto in those two legs. And he's the biggest reason why I think we're different this season. I mean, I know, Alex, you're like, oh, same old Arsenal, you guys are going to choke at some point. We haven't won 8 straight games in the Premier League ever under Arteta. So that's where we're at right now, form-wise. You know, the only loss we have this calendar year was that 1-0 loss to Porto. We've won every other game. We're in March right now. So, I mean, we're in the best form and the best that I've seen
Arsenal.
That's
not true. You lost to Liverpool in the FA Cup, so.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, well, all right. That's fair. That's fair. Was that this year? That was, yeah.
I'll always catch you lacking when it comes to Arsenal, Javier. Don't you think you can sneak one by me? but what I'm hearing you saying, like, from that is that you don't want Kai Havertz off the pitch. And in, like, the role that he's stepped into, and when Arsenal, you know, this wasn't long ago, it was a couple of weeks ago, but when Arsenal were at their free-flowing, goal-scoring best, it was with Havertz and then Trossard kind of playing the two like false nine roles where they were switching like positions. Martinelli.
No,
on the
Alex,
left,
I don't know if you've seen,
right.
But like once but that, after
I'm,
that,
you mind if I just finish? Because what I'm hearing is that you're saying that Gabriel Jesus is like not going to be starting because he's, you know, he's come back from an injury and he's usually been coming off the bench while Havertz has been starting. If it's not Jesus off the bench, then is it Trossard? Because if Martinelli is playing on the left wing, Saka on the right, you have Odegaard and Rice nailed on in midfield. There's two positions left there, and you're attacking third for three players in Havertz, Trossard, and Jesus.
Well, I mean, Jesus isn't fit enough to start consistently in this team right now. So at the moment, Kai Havertz is
off the bench.
Absolutely. At the moment, Jesus is a great option off the bench. He can play anywhere off the front line. Any player, Saka, you know, Havertz or Trossard or Martinelli, whoever's on the left wing, he can, you know, play for them. But yeah, no, I mean, I think it's better to have all the options. But what I was going to tell you, Alex, is yes, I was waxing about, you know, the Kai Havertz Trossard connection. We played that against Porto, though. And
Trossard on the wing and then Havertz center forward, and then Jorginho
didn't start the game, but that's why
I was talking about the game on Tuesday.
The first leg against Porto. Okay. Yes. So we were on that great run in the Premier League, right? We were on the great run in the Premier League playing, destroying teams. Porto stopped that. And I think it led us to kind of developing a little bit more into realizing that having both of them on the pitch necessarily with, you know, we played Trossard center forward and Havertz in midfield. That's what we did in that first leg at Porto. I think we realized that that's not what we want to be doing, and we need to have Havertz at that false nine and Trossard either on the wing or, you know, on the bench, coming off the bench, and then Jorginho, Rice, and Odegaard in midfield.
I think that's pretty predictable, though, if you think about it. Like, obviously, you can get away with playing all those attacking players against, you know, Sheffield, Burnley, and, like, a West Ham team that's in the worst form of its entire season. But then once you come up against, like, an actually, like, solid defensive team in the Champions League, a team in Porto that, you know, they're used to, like, winning and competing for league titles in their own country and, like, showing up at this stage of the Champions League, there's going to be some different questions asked of that kind of setup. And it's not just as simple as play all your attacking players and score 5 goals. You've got to have a bit more nuance to how you approach a game like that. And that's definitely a positive sign from Arteta that he's adjusting immediately.
Like, as soon as we lost a game, he realized that, you know, we need to adjust this type of setup. And then we did. Since then, Jorginho's played every single game in the Premier League. We've won all those games and played again against Porto. I thought he did well. You know, just doesn't have the legs to play more than 90 minutes a week. You know, he can't play 3 games a week. He can't do that anymore. But, you know, if we play him 90 minutes and, you know, maybe we can rest him in whatever midweek game we have, he's a great option for us right now. So, you know, really happy with the contributions from Jorginho and Kai Havertz. And, you know, honestly, right now we're getting healthy. Yurian Timber's back in training. Tomiyasu's back in training. Thomas Partey's been on the bench, coming off the bench the last couple games. Zinchenko's back on the bench. You know, we pretty much don't have any injuries, you know, knock on wood right now. And it's the great time to be getting fit and to start having options. Because, you know, Ben White's been amazing, but he's going to need some rest. Like you said, we're going to start having, you know, I think we're going to play 8 or 9 games in April. So we're going to need...
You're jinxing it right now, dude. There's an international break a week away.
Oh God!
I'm not going to talk about injuries yet, Alex. We're getting fit at the right time, and then all of a sudden, 3 players get injured right before the City game after the international break. I'm just telling you, don't jinx it. You don't want to do that. Before we move on from Arsenal, I want to just mention, like, before we finish the Champions League talk, we now know all the quarterfinalists. The next round set: Arsenal, obviously, Manchester City, Real Madrid, PSG, Bayern Munich, Atletico Madrid, Borussia Dortmund, and Barcelona. Which, I know you're on the record as saying you want Bayern Munich to get some revenge for, you know, when they slapped you up like 8-2 on aggregate, what, like 7 or 8 years ago?
10-2.
Yeah, 10-2, that's it, yeah.
5-1.
None of the players from those teams, other than Neuer and Müller, I would say. Yeah, I guess Neuer and Müller are the only ones that are still there.
That's enough. That's enough to get revenge. Especially Müller. Müller's a big shit talker.
Who do you want in the next round? You're on record with Bayern Munich, but, like, give us your who do you want, who do you not want?
Top two picks are Bayern and Barca, right? I want both of them because we have beef with both in Champions
League. Before Dortmund?
Well, all right. If I want the easiest, I think would be Dortmund. I think that would be my number one pick for, like, yes, to get through to the semifinals. I would want Dortmund. So I'll say number one pick Dortmund. If in terms of easiness of draw, I think the teams that I want the least are obviously Manchester City. Number one, I don't want Manchester City, and I don't want PSG, and I don't particularly want Real Madrid. But I do think they aren't as strong as they have been in previous years. So, you know, I think if there's a window to play Real Madrid, honestly, anyone but City. This is like my my mantle right now, because we're gonna have to beat these teams to get to win the Champions League anyway. So like, if we get Real, if we get, you know, PSG, like, we're gonna have to beat those teams anyway. So I'm not gonna be butthurt if we get them, but I just don't want Man City, please.
Yeah, Man City over two legs just seems impossible. Like, the reason I felt good about Chelsea winning the Champions League 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, when we got City in the final, was just because it was a one-off game. I was thinking, like, we can win a one-off game against them, but two legs home and away, especially if they get the second leg at the Etihad, you're just like, you're basically asking for 180 minutes of hanging on for dear life and hoping that it's somewhat close going into the last, like, 20 minutes of the second game. And even then, you probably still won't win. But yeah, I can understand wanting to wait to see someone like City until the final and hoping that some other team can knock them out before they get to the final. What about Atletico Madrid? Would you be confident about going through against them? That would just be like, sure. If Porto are the Charmander, Madrid are the Charizard of
absolutely.
That type of
team. Absolutely. I was going to say, I don't think it would be as hard of a matchup as you might think, because we just played Porto and we would have had just a fantastic practice at teams that play, I mean, very similar styles. So believe it or not, like, I think that Porto game was very, very big. Both of those games were very big for the development of this Arsenal team in terms of grit, of learning what, like, how tough these games in Europe can be. You know, how tough the home and away games can be, how, like, don't take the home games for granted. I think our team's going to grow from that. I mean, just amazing experience, and getting through by the skin of our teeth is just makes it all that sweeter.
All right, well, let's shift our focus back to England, back to the Premier League and FA Cup games coming up this weekend. We do have to mention that Liverpool-Manchester City game that finished 1-1 last weekend, the game that opened the door for Arsenal to, I guess, remain in first place.
60 million down the drain. Kai Havertz scores again. Summer, waka, waka, waka. Okay. All right.
I won't be singing that in May, I'm telling you. But yeah, Arsenal are top on goal difference on 64 points. Liverpool also on 64 points.
Two 86-minute winners from Kai Havertz against Brentford this season. That's kind of a wild statistic.
I forgot about the first one. Yeah, I don't remember that
one. The first one was the Saka inverted cross back post. Havertz heads it in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the top of the Premier League is three teams separated by a point at the moment. Arsenal and Liverpool on 64 points, first and second. Manchester City in third place, 63 points. And the next time Arsenal and Manchester City play in the league will be against each other at the Etihad after this international break. So it's real juicy right now at the top end. And, you know, as we mentioned,
when was the last time we had a three-horse race like this? Been a while.
Last time I remember was 2014. And the only reason I remember that is because it was Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool. When Liverpool choked the title, Gerrard slipped. People forget because, like, we didn't win the league that season, but we were like 2 points off the top going into the last like four games of the season. And we were part of right behind Manchester City and Liverpool when Liverpool had that Steven Gerrard slip game at Anfield against us. People counted us out because we had a bunch of injuries and starting players like Thomas Kalash at the back and stuff. But we were in the league title race that season. But it eventually, people only remember it for City and Liverpool because their teams were better. So that's the last time I remember it. But it used to happen more regularly back when it was, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson's Man United and, you know, Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal, all kind of like, you know, fighting for the other like top three or four spots. Like, and sometimes it would be two clubs pushing United, sometimes it would just be one. But yeah, it's something that's kind of gone away, and we've only really seen a two-horse race between City and Liverpool, if there even is one. Then obviously last year, Arsenal and Manchester City. It's getting really, really juicy. And I know City didn't look amazing in the second like half specifically of that game on Sunday, but I think it's really important for their title like hopes that they didn't lose that Anfield game. You know, if Liverpool had like gotten the goal that it seemed like was coming for a lot of that second half, that might have broken City to a degree. Just because they don't play in the Premier League for like almost a month. like since that game. It's technically 3 weeks because they're in the FA Cup next weekend, no Premier League action, and then 2 weeks of international break before they play Arsenal again. It would have been really, really bad for City if they were, you know, like 5 points off the top and having to play Arsenal in their very next Premier League game. Yes, they would have preferred to win, but just being a point behind Liverpool and a point behind Arsenal, getting to play them next, I think it's still perfectly set up for City to just flip the switch and go and win the league this season. I know you'll disagree with that, but I don't think it's the end of the world that City didn't win that game. I don't think so either. It's not a place he goes and does well at all the time.
I was going to say, getting a draw at Anfield is never a bad result. So, especially in a rival race, you know, they say draw the games away from home and win your games at home, and you know that's a recipe for winning the title. You know, if you win in that mini table of, you know, other title contenders, generally, you know, you're going to be the one that wins the title at the end of the season because, you know, the other teams can spank the bad teams just like you can. But the games that make a difference are the games like those. So City getting a draw away from home. Yeah, I think that's a great result for them, especially with the way the game played, you know. And again, Alex, but, you know, you saw Liverpool's lineup, you know, this was Kwanzaa and Van Dijk at the back with Joe Gomez and Connor Bradley. I mean, come on, dude. Like, you can't tell me that Gomez, Kwanzaa, Bradley, obviously Van Dijk's great, but that's three of their first choice out. The fact that they were able to play toe-to-toe with City, if not take the game to City, and probably should have gotten winner in the end, I mean, again, this isn't the Manchester City. I know they're getting the results. To me, this just isn't the Manchester City that we're so used to seeing at this point in the season. And, you know, Liverpool should not have had three 1v1s that Luis Diaz messed up, Darwin Nunez messed up, a couple chances. You know, there could have been, I think Harvey Elliott hit the post. You know, Liverpool could have scored three or four goals and really had a pretty comprehensive result against City in this game. And I again, if I'm a City fan, I'm worried that these results aren't, that my team isn't playing better. Like, the eye test isn't showing that. Like, I know Phil Foden's playing really well individually, and like, we see flashes of De Bruyne still being amazing, Rodri's still amazing, but it doesn't feel like as a team they're like 100% going full steam yet right now. And I still get that feeling. I got that feeling in this game. This was not 100% Liverpool team. They didn't have Mohamed Salah. They had Harvey Elliott starting on the wing. I mean, again, like, you see this team on paper. Kelleher was in goal. Oh my God, I forgot. They didn't even have Alisson. Dude, so four of the five first-choice backline, and City, I'm not going to say they barely had a sniff, but, they, you know, they had a few chances, but like...
Well, the thing everyone keeps pointing to is that Haaland was left completely isolated, and you can credit Van Dijk for that, but I actually think what left Haaland isolated more so was just the intensity and how Liverpool maintained that press, never really dropped off, never really gave City the sort of
air. How do you do that with Kwanzaa, Bradley, Gomez, and Kelleher? Well,
you don't. You do it with your forward players. Pressing starts from the front, and, you know, Nunez and Diaz.
But maintaining the ball in possession and like not losing the ball against Man City, who are like the best pressing team in the country for the last decade.
Yeah, but I'm saying that Liverpool's own press high up was as such
suffocating.
That,
yeah,
their forward line, and specifically their midfield, McAllister, Endo, and Szoboszlai, who only just recently came back from a pretty long injury himself.
Endo was so good too.
The three of them just like bossed midfield, and like, it was the first time that I've ever seen Kevin De Bruyne look leggy, like look old, which would concern me if I was a City fan. But then again, you're not playing Liverpool at Anfield every week. Like, you're not going to be under those conditions where
a super weak Liverpool team. You're acting as if like Liverpool showed up with all their weapons here and it was a great... No, this was like a... Klopp's kids. This was Klopp's kids again.
I did not say that. I said that their forward line made up for those injuries at the back by pressing City and preventing City from ever really getting to attack their back line.
Not their first choice, you know? Darwin wasn't fully fit. He had to come off. They started Harvey Elliott and he played the whole game, you know?
I mean, Darwin, Diaz, McAllister, Szoboszlai, Endo are players that will usually will start for Liverpool.
Sure, they had Salah a few of their starters.
Salah instead of Elliott is the only one there that stands out for me.
Just again, I'm more impressed with Liverpool in this game than I was with City, but I think it was a better result for City.
I agree, but that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that this could have gone so much worse for City, and that you know they're a point off.
Like, I don't know how Liverpool keep doing it. I keep thinking that they're going to collapse, and like this was the game where I thought, okay, City will cut. Like, I saw the starting lineup, so I went, like, all right, City are going to pounce this Liverpool side. Anything but.
No, I think Liverpool, the problem with that thinking,
Liverpool
Javier,
had more
is that
possession.
You're ignoring the fact that it's going to be that Arsenal.
How did this Liverpool
break.
Team have more possession against City?
At Anfield, dude. Liverpool at Anfield is a different animal. Van Dijk has lost one game in the Premier League at Anfield since moving there. That's over like 5 years. He's been there.
Yeah, and Rodri personally is on like a 63 or 64 game unbeaten run.
Yeah,
which is also just insane.
But yeah, we've got 10 games to go in the Premier League. All those, some teams have played fewer games than others, but all those top three teams, you've all played 28 games. Other than that Manchester City Arsenal game, they're all done playing each other. So after this, it's going to be who has the toughest schedule, who can manage their injuries and other competitions.
And how well they do against Tottenham and Manchester United. Those are the two, because I think everyone still has those games left. I think Liverpool, City, and Arsenal all still have to play Tottenham and United.
No, Liverpool are done with United. They have them in the FA Cup this weekend, but they're done with them in the league. And City are done with United. They've played them twice. But I know the answer to this question. I'll ask it anyway. Who do you think's coming out on top? 10 games to go. It's officially the business end of the season.
I'll answer that after the City game, Alex.
Guess what, everyone? He's going to say Arsenal.
Well, if we win, if we lose,
well, no. If you draw, you're going to say Arsenal too.
If we draw, yeah, sure. If we draw away from home, and then we keep top of the top three table, because we haven't lost against the top three yet this season.
Okay,
if
you draw against City,
you're
not going to stay top of the table if you draw against. Sorry, I mean if you draw against City at the Etihad, because Liverpool are going to win their game and go top. So,
all right, but I'm saying, you know, I don't care about staying top. I'm saying if we stay top of that table against the top three and we, you know, end up not losing any games against the top three this season, that'll be...
Oh, you're right about Liverpool. Liverpool still have United away. Okay. Let me just read you Liverpool's schedule. Brighton at home, Sheffield at home, Man United away, Palace at home, Fulham away, West Ham away, Tottenham at home, Villa away, to end the season.
All right, there's some slippery. We have similar.
There's
games
some slippery to them. Ones in there, but
yeah,
you know.
we have a similar end to the season than that to them.
Okay, let's preview some games coming up this week. FA Cup. I just want to mention that Man United Liverpool. That's going to be Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Am I wrong in saying this is like the highlight game of the weekend? I mean, there's some other Premier League games and some relegation six pointers, but. You know, Chelsea-Leicester in the FA Cup, Man City-Newcastle.
I think it's Luton-Nottingham Forest, Alex, because we got to talk about the relegation battle.
Now, we'll get to that. I think this has got to be the biggest match of the
weekend.
But we do have to mention...
Oh, you're saying the FA Cup. Okay.
I'm saying
the FA Cup has the biggest game of the weekend.
Man
United-Liverpool, Man City-Newcastle should be a good one. The Cashico?
No.
El Cashico? El Oil?
Newcastle
Oil Derby?
Newcastle are dead. I'm telling you. They're going to get absolutely slapped up by City.
Yeah, we kind of murdered them. We took their spirit away from them.
I think the injury table or the injury list took their spirit from them because, you know, they're one of like a few teams like Manchester United and like Liverpool at times this season and Chelsea that they've just had their whole season turned on its head by injuries. That they never really stood a chance of getting back into the top four when you consider all the injuries they've had. So I feel for them a little bit, but... They're not going to be able to do much against City, especially away this weekend. The Liverpool going to Manchester United. I think everyone's favoring Liverpool.
There's
how much
good
of a chance
here,
like, can you
Fulham
possibly
at home
give
to Tottenham?
Manchester
That's a
United?
Good one.
Yeah, yeah. But
West
we've
Ham
established
Villa?
There's some other good games, yeah. But this Manchester United Liverpool in a quarter final of the FA Cup,
I mean,
winner goes to
I'm
Wembley.
I'm not like that excited about it because I feel like. I mean, I guess it's United Liverpool's always a big occasion. And
if it was at Anfield, I would agree with you, but it's at Old Trafford. You never
so
know.
I guess it'll be competitive, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Liverpool will trounce them, but it's all a matter of like how. Are there certain players that United can get back like fit? Is Højlund going to be back
fit? It seems
fit?
Like Liverpool can play Kwanzaa, Harvey Elliott, and Bradley every week, and they're going to win, so it doesn't matter. Even if they trot out all their kids, they win. They beat us with their kids in the FA Cup.
They beat us with their kids.
So, you know what? Like, it just seems like Klopp's kids are invincible this season. And Klopp keeps talking about how he's retiring. Did you see that? Did you see in an interview with him, they were like, Jurgen, like, what do you think of, like, this young player? He was like, why would I care about that? I'm retiring. You're like, okay, so like, would you want to see him at Liverpool next season? He was like, I don't care. I'm retiring.
There's a chance that Højlund could be back for this game. If Højlund's back, do you give United a chance?
I just want to see
Liverpool go out of the FA Cup. I don't want another Chelsea-Liverpool-Wembley game.
United's
I'm sick
like
of
last
it.
Chance for anything in the FA Cup is the FA Cup. So maybe, you know, they're really going to focus on this game because it does feel like the recent results in the Premier League have kind of, you know, deflated, especially the Højlund injury, obviously deflated United, you know, in the Premier League, you know, losing the big derby to City, you know, losing that horrible game to Fulham. You know, it doesn't, even though they got a pretty easy, you know, comprehensive win last weekend.
Against Everton, yeah.
Against Everton, you know.
That's to be expected.
There was still a lot of chances from Everton, a lot of shots, missed chances, like tap-ins. Everton had 23 shots. Again, how did Man United let Everton shoot on them 23 times? It's beyond me. You know, how are these, like, United defensively and in midfield still need a lot of help. The injuries have been horrific still. You know, they're still trotting off Johnny Evans, Lindelof as, you know, their wing backs or, you know, or in their back line with Dalot and Varane. I mean, it's a mess right now. So until they can get some of those players back from injury, no, I don't give them a chance. I don't think Johnny Evans and Lindelof are going to be able to do a job against this Liverpool team, even their kids. You know what I want to see? I want to see Ten Hag put his balls on the table and start, you know, Kambawala, put his kids out. You know, put Kambawala out, put Toby Collier in there. You know, I don't know who else they've got. Ogonye, you know, all their kids that they have in there. Throw some of them on there and see how they do against Klopp's kids. You know, just change things up a little bit. At least don't trot Lindelof and obviously Garnacho. He's still playing amazingly, and he's their one like shining beacon. Him and Kobbie Mainoo, you know, play around those players and try to figure out, you know, build your team around that, because the rest of the team is
dead.
Yes.
All right. Well, I don't really have a prediction for that one. Obviously, with the FA Cup,
I'm gonna say like 2-1.
Varies
Liverpool.
So much. Yeah, I'll probably say like 2-1. Liverpool, that sounds about right. Maybe 1-1, then penalties, something like that, if United have Højlund back and can, you know, raise their game for that one match. But we'll see. Back to the Premier League. Fulham-Tottenham kind of stands out. Fulham been doing decently well, especially
at home of late. Oh, I'm an idiot. I was saying that those are...
Yeah, no. I've put Premier League next to the games that are Premier League, and I put FA Cup next to the games that are FA Cup.
Yeah, I thought those were in the FA Cup for a second.
No.
I see. Okay.
There are only 8 teams left in the FA Cup now. It's getting down to the business end of that. But Fulham-Tottenham, I feel like after Tottenham's 4-0 win at Aston Villa, you can't really doubt them, even though Fulham have been playing well at home.
On a good run recently, yeah. They've been playing well, especially at home.
It's a good test for Tottenham. I mean, we didn't really see Villa sort of rise to the occasion in that 4-0 demolition they faced last week. That obviously wasn't helped by McGinn being sent off, but they were already 2-0 down when that happened. Are we just expecting another Tottenham big win here?
I don't know. I mean, João Palhinha's back. He came off the bench in their loss to Wolves. I mean, obviously, they were on a good run, and then they go and lose to Wolves, who aren't, you know, in their own right, not a bad team. But, by the way, another Neto injury. I mean, the poor guy, he can't catch a break, but it seems like his play style is... did you see they started Nathan Fraser up top, Alex? Irish lad? Ah! How many young Irish... why is he brown?
What?
He's brown? Nathan Fraser is there's a brown Irish lad.
We have brown and black people that play for Ireland now. Chidoze Ogbene, come on, man, get hip.
All right. I mean,
Michael
Obafemi. Back to Fulham. I
Andrew
think Fulham are a little.
Omobamadele.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah, they're up
Ireland's
and down.
Changing.
All right. Yeah, some diversity there. Good, that's good stuff. I like it.
Hey, man, if France and Belgium can do it, so can we. You know.
But I wouldn't count out Fulham, Alex. I think if they have you know Sasha Lukic, who's been great, and Paulinha in midfield, you know I could see something. I could see them doing something. I mean I like their options off the bench: Dama Traore, Broya. You know I think this Tottenham
Broya's
team.
Broya's not playing. Broya has barely played a minute since going there
assist.
In January.
He got an assist. He assisted Iwobi in the last game. Yeah.
Good for him because he joined there on loan in January, and I think I had only seen him play like some minutes in an FA Cup game.
I expect a reaction from Wolves in this home game, or from Fulham. I'm sorry. So I do expect a performance from them. I think I'm going to say 2-2 draw. I think Tottenham drop points here. Fulham have been really good at home against, you know, other London teams. And it's a London derby. I think the players are going to be up for it. The fans are going to be up for it. Yeah, I'm going to say 2-2. I think Tottenham slip up a little bit here.
Okay. Well, we don't have much time left. So, Javier, if you want to get your little fantasy suggestions in now, please go ahead and do so. It's it's a tumultuous
weekend
in fantasy.
We've got a special menu for you guys tonight. You know, we're not going to do courses. It's going to be more, you know, the general suggestions for this week because there's only four fixtures, like Alex said. I think the big fixture of the weekend is that Luton-Nottingham Forest game. You know, Luton 3 points out of the relegation zone. There could be a lot of goals in that one, so I wouldn't necessarily look at defensive players, but I would definitely think about either bringing in Awoniyi or Carlton Morris as like your value striker in that. I think I'm leaning more toward Morris because Awoniyi's been coming off the bench and Chris Wood's been playing a lot. I don't think Awoniyi's fully fit, and Morris is the one striker in that game who's, you know, on penalties and sure to play 90 minutes, so... he's 5.2 mil. I would look to bring him in. By the way, I do think if you have your free hit, you should use it this week because you shouldn't be making a bunch of transfers to try to pull five or six players for this week because you're just going to, if you take a bunch of points hits, it's not going to be worth it. And you're going to have to take point hits to get your players back to, you know, the schedule from before. So I would just take a free hit this week and try to make the best template team you possibly can for the game week. Some very obvious popular picks are going to be the Tottenham players, you know, Heung-Min Son, James Maddison. Definitely should have those in your team. I think, you know, Brentford versus Burnley. You know, Brentford play away to Burnley. Burnley have been awful at home, one of the worst teams at home, conceding, shipping, you know, 4 or 5 goals every game. So I think Tony should be one that you should definitely have. I'm sure everyone will have Watkins in their team. There's a few, you know, options that you can get to defensively. You know, there's so many. I'm not really going to go into them. So, you know, but I would think that defensively, the team that maybe is the most likely to pick a clean sheet is possibly Brentford. But again, there isn't going to be a lot of defensive returns this game week. So I would look at attacking fullbacks, at attacking midfielders, you know, the strikers who are going to get goals, and load your team up with them. And, there's not too many secret picks out there. I think most people can look and see who are going to be the best players for this game week and just free hit and put them in there. I think it's worth it for the week.
I think if you're going to bring in a center back or two, the best options to look at would be Brentford because they're so strong on set pieces and Burnley concede off of set pieces at home or away. Like if you're looking at players like Collins or like even Ben Mee and Christoph
Ben Mee's
Iyer.
Out for the season, so I would go Collins.
Oh, Ben Mee's out? Okay, yeah. Pinnock, whoever's available for Burnley, the center backs at Burnley, they obviously try to focus on those set-piece opportunities and, you know, the big lads come up from the back and try and nudge one in. So that's the only options for center back that I would say you could look into. But, solid advice, Javier. I'll take that when I'm setting my lineup a little bit later this week. Javier, congrats to Arsenal. You've peaked in March. This is the best it's ever going to be. Top of the league. It's all downhill from here. Take it from me. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Let's see. And, if it's not all downhill from here, inshallah. That's all. Let's just hope.
If you want to follow Javier, you can do so at JavierRev9 on Twitter /X. You can follow me at ASMoss92 on Instagram and Twitter. And you can follow the podcast socials at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy the Premier League and FA Cup games this weekend. And until next time, see you.